Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
There goes the Daverhood! Welcome, everybody, to this final February free-for-all we call Dave's Gone By, which airs free-for-all on WGBB Sunday nights at 11, with vintage episodes of the show rebroadcast on Live365.com Thursday nights at 8 and 11. If you listen every week, you know that we try to do a mix of talk radio, music, and comedy, with the balance a little different each time. Our last episode, that was mostly about music. We had an interview with Peter Tork of the Monkees and played some of their classics. My apologies, by the way. That show was supposed to air on the 12th, but because of that gigantor snowstorm we had, I couldn't get to the station, so we held the broadcast till a week later. Anyway, the week before that, the focus was mostly comedy. We had Jamie Masada, founder of the Laugh Factory, on, as well as a comedy sketch about football to tie in with the Super Bowl. Well, tonight's episode, rather than music or comedy, we delve more into the talk radio vein. Still amusing, I hope, but this one's going to be more about interesting talk, and I hope you're interested. Our guest is a fellow named Mike Shiley. Mike Shiley is a world traveler and documentary filmmaker, and he's combined the two talents and put together films about his trips to Thailand and Cambodia, which is cool, kind of his own personal globe trekker. But in late 2003, he picked another spot on the map, a hot spot, about as hot as you can get, considering the times we live in. He went to Baghdad, Iraq, for a month, in the middle of a war, semi-officially with a TV news bureau and for a week or so with our military, but mostly on his own, going places even Bob Woodruff wasn't poking around. What he came out with was a movie, Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories, but also a perspective on the country and the situation there and life day-to-day there that we just don't get from the nightly news. We have this vague idea of the Arab world as a bunch of people wrapped in shmatas, praying and living in tents and plotting the destruction of the Western world. And while that's true about a dismaying number of radicals that seem clustered throughout the Middle East, it's more true that, like anywhere else, most folks just want to get by day, feed their families, have a business, get home safely. And that goes for the soldiers we have over there, the people living there, the young, the old. As I said, Mike Shiley offers an objective perspective, or tries to, on post-Saddam Iraq, one that you really can't get anywhere else. But we get it here, Mike Shiley, on Dave's Gone By. And then, later on in the show, a segment called Dave Goes Off, where I go off on a fairly self-centered topic, my own name. More common than you think, or at least than I thought, and that name again is Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, and humorist, and host of Dave's Gone By, which is sponsored by Hewlett Minuteman Press, those copy kings, Performing Arts Insider Magazine, The Theater Bible, and by MortgagesRock.com. If you've ever thought about being a real estate broker, helping the people you know to refinance their homes or get small business funding or a college loan, MortgagesRock.com will teach you how. Mostly it's paperwork, and the more you learn how to do it yourself, the more commission you'll earn on every sale. Discount Funding Associates runs MortgagesRock.com, which isn't just a website. There's an actual office and a team of licensed professionals guiding you every step of the way. MortgagesRock.com, making money never sounded so good. And it's good to have you with us on this Sunday night. Filmmaker Mike Shiley takes us between Iraq and the hard place to 60 seconds from now.
Oh my god, the wedding is next month! We need flyers, invitations, booklets, Irving, we are screwed!
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterheads, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling, let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, off-off-off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, and where are the places that you would like to spend the middle of the winter, or I should say early winter? Would you want to be in Miami or San Francisco, perhaps, or going out towards Italy or the Caribbean, maybe Mexico? How about, oh, I don't know, Iraq? I think that'd be a kind of interesting place to spend a couple of weeks around Christmas time and thereafter. Well, that would strike most of us as nuts. However, there's one person who did that very nutty thing, and he's not a soldier, and he's not technically a news broadcaster or there for any reason, reasons corporate or otherwise. He's just someone who has traveled a lot and figured if there was a place to be that would be interesting in the world, it would be Baghdad, you know, just fairly shortly after the war, and that's what Mike Shiley did at the very end of 2003. He went inside Iraq and came out with a documentary called Inside Iraq. I'm going to ask him about it. Mike, I think we have him on the phone.
Yeah, hi, Dave. How are you today?
Mike, how you doing? Good, good. Well, welcome back to America. You've been here like 3 years already, but welcome back anyway.
Well, thank you.
Why, dude? Why?
Well, that's the question everybody asks, definitely the question everybody asks. Well, I lived in the Middle East for a year. I've traveled all over the world. I've been to 38 countries. And number one, I've always wanted to be a war correspondent. And number two, as an adventure traveler, Iraq is at the very top of my list. So I decided to approach my local ABC affiliate station in Portland, Oregon, and ask them if I could volunteer to be a freelance reporter for them, even though I had no experience. And after I signed a liability release waiver so that if I got killed or kidnapped, they wouldn't be responsible.
Yeah.
I then rented a bulletproof vest, which you can do in Miami, cashed in airline miles, made a press pass at Kinko's, and flew to Iraq for 2 months, where I got into the country, I got into the ABC News Bureau in Baghdad, and I even got embedded with the U.S. military.
And all of this just for your own curiosity? I mean, you did have sort of the backing of ABC News, but...
I did. I had permission from my local affiliate to volunteer as a freelancer for them. So I had a tepid permission to go in. But basically, I was a private citizen.
Yeah, people actually should know if they go to your website.
It's InsideIraqTheMovie.com.
InsideIraqTheMovie.com. But there's also a place where people can read your blog, your diary, while you were in Iraq and writing for KATU, that affiliate in Portland. So it's basic missives of from your very first day there to going through what you went through, which, thank goodness, wasn't anything so terrible from at least what I read or so far what I've seen in the movie. I mean, I don't think you really encountered anything. I mean, obviously your life was in danger every day. But did you ever have any really hair-raising experiences?
Well, on the very first day that we crossed the border, my driver told me that he wanted to go get more cigarettes. And about an hour outside of Fallujah, he decided to pull off the road and leave the convoy behind. And I thought that I was being kidnapped.
And I
thought that here I am 4 hours into the country, and I'm already being kidnapped.
And he really just wanted cigarettes? I mean, I saw the guy. Yeah.
he really just wanted cigarettes. And I couldn't believe how stupid that was that he would stop an hour outside of Fallujah just to buy cigarettes.
There was another scene in the film that also appeared kind of dangerous, although nothing happened. We were talking about the markets that they have there and the businesses that have opened up in Iraq and Baghdad since the downfall of Saddam and since the Americans have been there. And that, it is, obviously regular businesses are suffering because there's, again, this is going back to 2003, but electricity was only on for like 25% of the day and people had trouble with gas and water, but the black market was coming up in the world. Why don't you tell a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, the funny thing about it, Dave, is when you give a country that doesn't have freedom, you give them freedom, we think the first things that come through the door is the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, maybe a 7-Eleven or two, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened with the Iraqis that I observed was they got pornography, prostitution, drugs, illegal weapons markets. You can buy a rocket-propelled grenade at an openly in a market for $25.
Oh, come on. A working rocket launcher?
A working rocket launcher. A rocket-propelled grenade for $25, and the launcher is $50.
Did you buy one?
No, but for $75, you can completely outfit yourself, and it pierces armor.
Did you see anybody buying them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, everybody was buying them. They were buying all kinds of munitions on the side of the road on these little gun markets.
But can we assume that? Yeah, sorry.
And I captured it all on my film, including the porno markets and porno theaters. And it's kind of amazing what's going on in Iraq. And the thing about it, Dave, is that most reporters that go there, and rightly so, never go outside the Green Zone. And the Green Zone is really just the Baghdad Convention Center, the Al-Rashid and the Sheraton Hotel area. It's maybe a 2 or 3 acre complex. And they never go outside and wander the streets. And I decided to go out and wander the streets, and the things I found were amazing.
Well, yeah, that's also going to be a shock for, I guess, most Americans who only see what's on TV or only know about the Arab world from that standpoint. I mean, we think in terms of, okay, we're over there bombing these people into nothing, but they were living in huts anyway, and they spend all day on prayer mats, you know, praising Allah and vowing for the destruction of Israel, which a certain contingent of them do. But there's also, I mean, Baghdad is a city. You know, there's people with printing shops, and there's people with, you know, a bookstore, and it really, people wearing suits and ties and speaking English. I mean, it was not like third world sort of African hut civilization over there. Again, mostly, I guess, thanks to Saddam. Americans don't necessarily register that when they think of what's going on over there, because all they see is, like, armies going up, in convoys on burned-out roads.
Correct. That's right. Baghdad does have a history of good education. They have engineers and accountants and construction people, and they, you know, they're a secular society, and they have built, you know, roads and highways and museums and bridges and everything, and they do have a certain degree of sophistication there. And I would say that I understand where you're coming from with the bowing for the destruction of Israel, but you know, I lived in Egypt for a year. I've been to Syria, Jordan. I've been to Israel 7 times. And I personally never once heard any Arab person that I have been encountered with say that they wished for the destruction of Israel. And I'm Jewish.
Oh my gosh.
Well, my mom is Jewish.
Okay. Well, that makes you Jewish, dude. Are you Jewish between the legs?
No.
Really? So that's, you're halfway there.
I'm halfway there.
Wow, and you're Jewish and went to all these Arab countries. It's kind of nice to hear that, you know, they're not all sitting there smoking hookah pipes and thinking of how they can drive our people into the Red Sea.
They are smoking hookah pipes, but they may not necessarily be thinking about that. They may be more thinking about how they're going to feed their families and who's going to win backgammon tonight.
Huh. Now, since you were there at the end of 2003, from what you've heard in response to your film and in response to your journalism, to whomever You may have made friends with and kept in touch with over there. Have things gotten better, worse, better in some ways, worse in others?
Things have gotten much worse in Iraq
as
far as the security is concerned.
Okay.
When I was there, there were only 14 insurgent attacks a day. The USA Today reported about 2 weeks ago that in 2005,
mm-hmm.
jumped to over 100 insurgent attacks a day.
Well, then there's $25 grenade launchers. What the hell do they expect?
That's true. And that counts. You know, if they fire one of those off, that's an insurgent attack, and they have an average of 100 of them a day now. There's no way that I could have made this film today.
Right.
Because Iraq is just simply too dangerous now.
I haven't seen the whole film, but I'm wondering, though, it seems to me that what you were taken to was more of the secular Iraq, the Iraq that would be looking at pornography, buying cigarettes, trying to run businesses. Were you able to infiltrate is the word, but really get towards the deeply religious Islamist, if not radical, but certainly that group that voted, the type of people who voted for Hamas, in other words?
There's no doubt that group exists in Iraq. Obviously, it exists. I didn't have any personal experiences with them. You know, I'd like to say that in my experiences in Iraq, and for the most part in the Arab Middle East, that, you know, a lot of people are not a part of the radical Islamists. Just like not every Jew, is a Hasidic.
Right. Okay. I mean, I think we do get that over here. I mean, even with the whole cartoon thing.
Right.
You know, we realize that is a small group, but the group just seems too damn big even as it is. What were your thoughts of the American military over there, the job they're doing?
The individual soldiers as human beings are really pretty decent people, pretty good guys working hard to try to survive and try to get their job done. The military, though, as an institution and as a bureaucracy, is so fumbling and bumbling that it seems like they are their own worst enemies. And I point to the dump on base, where it's so organized, disorganized on the largest base in Iraq, that oftentimes goods that come in from America that the military has ordered, the unit that ordered them no longer needs that good, and they wind up throwing it in the dump. And there are goods that are still bounded to the pallets that they were shipped on, and they've gone from the factory directly into the dump.
There are other units
in Iraq on the same base that will reorder that very same item because they can't find it. It's in the dump. Meanwhile, there's gangs of Iraqi kids are starved to death and are willing to risk a bullet to sneak under the wire and scavenge at our dumps.
And I think you also show, like, a giant oil spill, speaking of oil, that's just leaching into the ground and poisoning pretty much everything around it for the next 10 years that nobody's cleaning, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, environmentally, you know, armies, especially the U.S. Army, has never exactly been recycle-minded. You know, they just pretty much dump whatever they want, wherever they want it, and when it's a huge army, you know, it creates a giant mess.
The only thing the military recycles is bodies. You know, some go down, they get more. They ship for more, that's it, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I would say that whether a person likes the Iraqi people or hates the Iraqi people, I think that it's going to be good for all Americans to try to understand more about what's going on in the country. Whether they agree with it or not, or whether they like the Iraqi people or not, we just don't get a lot of information about what's happening in Iraq, because the media really only covers car bombs and press conferences. They don't get deeper into it. And that's one of the great things about the film, is that it gets deeper into the issues. And you don't have to like the Iraqi people or like Arabs to want to know and to have a look into their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty funny early in the film, someone, you know, you point a camera at someone and they say, oh, you know, all Iraqis nice people. We all get along. From here, we all know, like, right, sure. And let the Palestinians move into Iraq. We'll see how much you love them. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, they fight just as much as Israelis do, let me tell you.
That does bring up the question when you point the camera at someone and they say stuff like that. you feel that because you have the camera on you pretty much, I assume all the time, that that does shift the reality already, that on some level you were changing the true reality there just because people had cameras on them.
Yeah, that's always a good point. You know, how do people change when the camera turns on? I try to use a very small camera, and I shoot everything with just one person as the crew, me. So I don't come through with, you know, a five-person crew and a giant camera and a bunch of producers. I go through the markets with one small camera and just me. So I try to catch a lot of real life as it is.
You did the sound as well? It was a mic on the camera, picked up the same sound. It was really good.
Yeah, I put a high-quality shotgun mic on the camera, and I try to monitor the audio through the screen. You know, I mean, I'm a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest, you know?
but
I'm one person, and I'm trying to make a difference. I'm trying to show Americans what it looks like over there, whether they like it or not. And I couldn't get anybody else to go with me, so I had to go by myself. And so I did the best I could, but I think that I captured a lot of real-life moments over there.
By the way, I should mention to folks, aside from the fact that we are talking with Mike Shiley, who is the video documentary maker of Inside Iraq, The Untold Stories, this was not, like, as you said, your first trip outside our borders. I mean, in 1989 you were working, and you were just, I guess, bored at work and saving your pennies, and you decided to travel. A lot of people do that. They go away for 2 or 3 weeks, and maybe somewhere even fairly exotic, like an African safari. But you went for like 18 months, right?
Yes, I did. I went for 18 months.
To where?
Well, my girlfriend told me that she had dumped me about 5 months into the trip, so I ripped up my return ticket and just decided to keep going.
And you went to?
Well, I went all over Europe, Scandinavia, Russia, Eastern Europe, all through the Middle East. I wound up living in Egypt. I lived actually in the Sinai Peninsula, and I lived in a little town called Dahab. And if any of your listeners have been to Israel or lived in Israel, they know that Eilat is the big diving area, but just south of Eilat is Sharm el-Sheikh and Dahab, and those are some of the finest diving sites in the world. And the Sinai Peninsula is relatively welcoming for Israelis to come down, and we certainly have many Israelis as customers.
But by the way, just in case that that was unclear, he's saying diving with a V, not like diving like eating areas. You're also a professional diver. So.
Correct, yes. Yeah. I'm a professional scuba diver. I'm a dive master.
Ooh.
And for people who are divers, I'm also a master scuba diver, which are two different things.
Now, let me ask you, though, in those travels of the 18 months, were there any either really, really scary moments or really extraordinary fun anecdotes that happened?
Well, absolutely. I mean, but most of it was created by my own, you know, my own stupidity, I think.
Such as?
I was taking a train from Prague to Istanbul, came into Belgrade, Yugoslavia at night, realized that Belgrade, this is 93, realized that Yugoslavia was a country at war, and I would have no way of getting out because of the UN economic sanctions around the country. And a Wall Street Journal reporter allowed me to sleep on the couch in her hotel room and took me down, met a few people, got hired by CNN to be a still photographer for them, and traveled through Yugoslavia for 2 weeks, well, at the time Serbia and Kosovo, for 2 weeks working as a still photographer for CNN, where I met Slobodan Milosevic.
Oh, my God.
Just shook his hand real quick as he was walking out of the room. We covered him in the press conference. And so there were a lot of things like that, Dave, where you just, you know, life is won by those who show up.
Yeah.
And if you don't show up, you can't play.
But, of course, if you do show up and you get shot.
Yeah, a lot of people want to live their life based on fear and make decisions based on fear. And I like to make my decisions based on love and doing things that I think is going to make me a better person.
Well, that then brings us to the question of, you've been to all these places, you've deep-sea dove in the Red Sea, you've gone to, you know, Sarajevo during wartime, you've been to Nepal and Thailand and Cambodia and Japan and, of course, Iraq. Where next?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I have kicked around the idea of doing a film on Iran. And
wow.
I know, it sounds totally crazy. But I'm really trying to get, you know, into the danger part of it. My next film coming out, though, is going to be about animal rescues of Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, that's cool.
I went down to New Orleans for 3 weeks, and I worked with the U.S. Humane Society. And I went out on animal rescues with them, and I shot a behind-the-scenes film showing what's really going on in New Orleans behind the scenes with rescuing these 50,000 stranded animals.
Well, as an animal lover and a dog owner, I totally applaud that. I'm wondering, now when you do stuff, since you have a few films under your belt, do you go with a grant, or do you still sort of save your pennies and then hope to sell the thing later, or how does that all work for you?
Well, what I do, David, is I finance everything myself. I try to keep the production at bare bones. I spent a total of $5,000 producing the Iraq film, and some of the footage that you'll see in the film I sold to ABC News and Nightline for $5,000. So I actually came out of Iraq with more money in my pocket than I did when I went in. But I basically financed the films myself. And, you know, I have a film out on Cambodia, Nepal, and Thailand as well.
Right.
And then what I do is I tour the country and speak and show my films and talk to people about world travel. And in the case of Iraq, I talk to them about what the situation in Iraq and what's going on. I'm currently on a 110-city U.S. tour with my Iraq film.
Oh, my God.
I'm in the Bay Area right now finishing up 9 shows.
Well, what's the question that people most ask of you?
How are we going to get out of the mess that we're in Iraq?
And your answer is?
My answer is we must split Iraq up into 3 separate countries.
Huh.
I don't think that these people will ever get along with each other. They've been fighting since 640 AD when Muhammad died. Half of them went with his brother and half of them went with his son. And that's the birth of the Shiites and the Sunnis. Split up into 3, the Kurds, the Shiites, and the Sunnis. The Kurds have already basically split away.
Yeah.
And they're actually a very successful template for what is going right over there. And why? Because they've split away. They've partitioned themselves, and they are actually very pro-U.S. It's the one shining star in the whole situation in Iraq. And I feel that, you know, think about it. Yugoslavia broke up into 5 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Soviet Union broke up into 18. India broke off into Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India. If those hadn't happened, there would have been bloodbaths. But because they did happen, they avoided extensive bloodshed. And I believe that Iraq is going to go into a major civil war. And I feel the only way to avert that is to split them up into 3 separate countries, have those 3 countries get into the oil industry and manage it as a 3-nation, multi-nation oil management and pump all those profits into those 3 countries.
Well, a little bit of profit into the U.S. I mean, you know, we're in Thailand.
Absolutely. Dick Cheney wouldn't go out and shoot people if he wasn't thinking to get some profit out of it.
So, you don't have satellite radio, you don't have an iPod or 100 music channels on your cable? Doesn't matter! Live365.com has dozens of radio stations in all sorts of formats, absolutely free. And one station, DFSX Radio, plays vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern. I've even put their link on davesgoneby.org, so just click to hear music and talk and me free on DFSX.
Hi, this is filmmaker Mike Shiley, and you're listening to Days Gone By on WGBB.
Hey, quick question for you. Do you ever ask any, I know it's a typical sort of ugly American question, but I think we're entitled. Do you ever ask anyone when you were in Iraq what they thought about 9/11?
You know, I didn't. And I, now that you bring that up, you're the only person that's ever asked me that. And now that you bring that up, I think that I would have asked people what they think about 9/11. In general, though, I would say I was in Thailand when 9/11 hit, and I would say that from my experiences over there, people may hate our government, but they like our people.
Well, they don't know them as well as I do, but, you know. Well, it's the first laugh I got out of you the whole conversation. I did it. I made them laugh. Yay!
No, it's good. I love the laugh. I've got a great sense of humor.
So,
I think that people around the world have a certain sympathy for other people that have that get into, you know, horrific situations like that. Absolutely. And I think it's, yeah, if they want to hate the government and like the people, it's fine. That's their choice.
Yeah, I don't know if Americans are so logical that way. I think we tend to connect the people with the government until we were shown otherwise. I mean, America as a group hated Russia as a group for decades. You know, it's all Russia. Russia was like this big old block represented by, you know, evil shoe-pounding leaders. And then, you know, go to Russia, and now Russia... No, there's people, they hate the government too, you know.
No, they sure do. I went to Russia, and the people there are really friendly, nice, hospitable, love Americans. And I think that people in general, and I don't want to talk about Jews and Arabs specifically, but I mean people.
Because we hate the Arabs, let's face it. No, I'm sort of kidding.
You can say that. But around the world, people in general share, you know, a certain goals. They share certain attributes. They want to have a good life. They want to raise their kids. They want to be happy. They want to, you know, have security. And I think that we share that kind of affinity with each other, whether we care to admit it or not.
That is so true. And it is so true. Why the hell have we had, like, such war and misery since B.C.? Since dinosaurs were fighting with each other.
Because as soon as you're bigger than the next guy, you want more. It's called greed.
Yeah. Last question for you. You mentioned risk. Good luck on the... the animal documentary about Katrina, but what about as far as going further afield, other places besides Iran that you would want to poke your neck into?
I am really focused on my Katrina and Iraq film right now. If I do anything, I might go to Iran.
Right.
But, you know, I haven't given it a lot of thought. I think maybe I'd like to just, you know, relax for a while. I might go back to Cambodia and try to do a really nice film on Cambodia and Angkor Wat and the whole history of Cambodia. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I do want to recommend folks to go to InsideIraqTheMovie.com to find out more about that film, Inside Iraq, as well as Mike Shiley's other films, where he's been to Thailand and he's been to Cambodia. And also, just to read his blog and his experiences. And as I said, I haven't finished the whole movie, but it's not for being bored or not wanting to. I just haven't had the time. It's good. And it's beautiful looking. You said you shot the thing for $5,000. Certainly does not look it. And you know, you've got a good camera, or at least voice presence, since you're mostly off camera. And you really put it together. It's like Michael Moore without the satirical dark comedy aspect. It's just there and real, and it's quite good.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I invite people to at least, you know, sign up for my newsletter and check out the website. And if they want to know what's more, a little bit more about what's happening in Iraq, take up the film. I promise they won't hate it.
I, you know, I can pretty much promise that to it. It really is good stuff, and it's been good stuff talking with Mike Shiley on Days Gone By. Thanks for coming all the way from other parts of the world to be in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Dave.
Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners. If you like hearing me, you love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of pure Dave. Only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit the Dave's Gone By website.
You want to buy a watch? No? How about a dishwasher? Vacation to Europe? Well, what's wrong with selling my stuff this way? How else? Advertise on Dave's Gone By? Take a 30 or 60 second ad on the radio? I can't afford that. I can, and I'll reach thousands of listeners all over America? How do I Dave'sGoneBy.org has all the info, huh? Great card and everything? Done deal! Hey, before I go, wanna buy a raincoat full of watches?
Dave goes off.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for a segment called Dave Goes Off. And it's exactly what the title says. I go off on a rant or a rampage or just off on a topic that's kind of interesting to me. Sometimes it's also more anecdotal stuff that's happened to me that I feel like sharing. And tonight, just kind of a minor anecdote, but it all centers around what's in a name. Now, believe it or not, and you would never get this, by the way, if you were getting some of the phone calls that I would get from telemarketers before certainly they put that law on the books where, you know, they could only call if you had conducted business with them before and you're on that no-call list. But before then, you know, dinner time, any time, a couple of times a week, I get telemarketers. And you always knew, even before they opened their mouths to sell you anything, I always knew that this was not a person that I knew, and this was someone from a credit card company or a phone company trying to sell me something, because they couldn't get my name right. They were calling from the middle of Bangladesh or Pakistan or Hindustan, where, you know, some prison somewhere in Marrakesh, and they could not pronounce my name. Now, I do not have a particularly difficult name, so far as I can tell. Dave or David Lefkowitz. Okay, that's four or five syllables. Lefkowitz. And yet, you would be astonished at the way my name would be mangled by people. And it's not like it's written with extra vowels or silent H's or, you know, like those cab driver names with lines through the O or six vowels together. No, it's just L-E-F-K-O-W-I-T-Z. It should be fairly phonetically pronounceable to anyone who has any competency in the English language. And yet, I swear to God, some of the phone calls I would get, you would think that they were calling Yuti Hushka Hushkum. And I could almost spell that. But, okay, so there's the thing. My name may not be terribly common in certain other countries, or certain other countries where if they heard my name, they burned me for being Jewish. But here, it is surprisingly a known and common name, and also has variants of it. So you get Lefkowitz's, spelled the way I spell it, Lefkowitz's, L-E-F-C, or there's an S on the end instead of a Z, or Lefkowitz with a V. And then there were all those folks at Ellis Island who came out of Ellis Island and decided to change things, like, you know, Lefko, or Lefkin, I guess, or Lukowitz, or Lukowski. I have neighbors on the block who their last name is Lane, and yet somewhere in their family that was changed from Lefkowitz. They may actually be distant cousins. And then it's amazing how many people I run into who say, oh, I might be a second or a third cousin of yours, or maybe we have family in common, because Lefkowitz is a fairly popular Jewish name. It isn't like Cohen, perhaps, but, and you know, I wonder if those folks calling from overseas can't even pronounce Cohen. They say, may I speak to Mr. Kren, please, or whatever they do. But that's not what I wanted to riff on. That's Jackie Mason territory, making fun of foreigners who can't pronounce names. No. I just wanted to make it clear that, at least in the general vicinity, Lefkowitz can be a fairly known name. And I see it in the papers all the time. Remember from the TV show Soap, they had that character Elaine Lefkowitz. And we were all, you know, my family was all thrilled. It's like, oh my God! Even though the character was a total bitch, at least in the first, you know, few episodes that she was in. But it's like, oh my God, there's a Lefkowitz on the... All our family was calling each other because we heard our name on television. Even though, at that point, we had already had an attorney general, no relation, named Louis Lefkowitz. So there you go. There's a little bit of backstory. So, last week, I go to the theater, as I am wont to do, and finally catch up with the Irish Repertory Theater's version of Mrs. Warren's Profession. That's an old George, well, they're all old George Bernard Shaw plays now. But it's one of the somewhat lesser known or lesser performed ones compared to, say, Pygmalion or Arms and the Man. And it's all about this girl who finds out that this girl has had a pretty easy life. She's always had a little bit of money that has gotten her through school. She's had a college education, and she's pardon me, she's working because she wants to work. She loves the idea of work. She's an industrious soul. And yet, you know, the bit of money that she received from her mother, whom she has been estranged from, and sees maybe once or twice a year for a couple of days, it's all worked out very well for her until she discovers that the money that her mother made that allowed them to live comfortably, she made in a rather, let's say, the oldest professional way. And this is provides all the conflict of the play. And usually I'm not a big Shaw fan. He tends to be fairly entertaining, fairly watchable, but also very talky. And, you know, some of the issues that he was raising 100 years ago, while still relevant, aren't particularly exciting anymore. And if you've seen a couple of the shows of his that they've done at the Roundabout Theater over the past bunch of years, it's always like, oh, okay, that was kind of well done, but something was missing, and I'm not sure it was really, really worth coming out for. And yet, when I saw the reviews for Mrs. Warren's Profession at Irish Rep, with terrific notices for Dana Ivey, who plays the mother in the play, Mrs. Warren, I said, all right, you know, let me go. And it's a sold-out run, pretty much, for the rest of the run. And they probably extend it even longer, but they have another show coming in, because it is a repertory kind of a theater. So they press agents were kind enough to squeeze me in, and was able to go there on a Wednesday matinee, kind of a cold, chilly winter Wednesday, and actually brought a friend of mine, Christine Lavin. And it's amazing, I can name drop. Now, I've never, ever been able to do this in my life, because I don't, you know, who will I know? I don't know any celebrities, any famous people. Well, I've interviewed some famous people, you know, and had conversations with, and maybe even, you know, a cocktail at an awards party. Well, they had the cocktail, I had soda. But, so it's kind of cool for me to say, oh, yeah, Christine Lavin, that great folk singer, you know, the one who wrote the Amoeba Hop. I hope you got to hear those episodes. They were terrific. They ran towards the end of last year. And now we kind of kept up a correspondence, and, you know, I brought her to the theater. She was a delightful conversationalist and great fun to hang with, and a big theater lover, which is A plus in my book anytime. So I get to the theater a little early before she did, and I'm going in to get my tickets as press. And I go up to the theater, and one of the other cool things about the Irish Rep is that it's still a very small company. It's a professional off-Broadway theater devoted to plays by Irishmen or about the Irish experience, at least tangentially. So they've done things by Eugene O'Neill, plus, in fact, it's unfortunate because it wasn't that good a show, but their most famous show, and one that really brought a lot of money into their coffers, was this review called, what was it, The Irish and How to Do About Them, or something a little flip like that. And it was kind of eh. But it just kept running and running. They kept bringing it back because people wanted to hear Irish music and old folk tales, and it was cool. So, anywho, going to Irish Rep, and up to the box office, and because it's such a small place and an intimate place, and they try to keep a hand in everything, there's a box office guy, but there's also next to him someone helping him, he's probably a trainee, run the box office, and it turns out to be the artistic director of the theater. There are two of them. There's Charlotte Moore and Karan O'Reilly, and I guess they take turns sometimes helping out doing the bread and butter kind of things, aside from directing and acting that they do. So Charlotte Moore was helping this box office guy, and it's always kind of neat to sort of, and most people don't even realize, I guess, unless they really know about the theater or are close to the theater, that she is the artistic, and they probably think she's just helping out. But I kind of knew, so I didn't know if she knew me, because, well, I have something of a name as a theater reviewer, because I used to run the website for a fairly major theater news organization, or because I've been a theater critic for almost 20 years now, or if she knew me by face because I've been to Irish Rep a few times, many, many times over the years. whatever it was, she kind of gave me a smile and seemed to sort of know me while she was talking to this box office fella and telling him what to do. And she sees my name and she says, oh, David Lefkowitz. You know, he's that guy who was killing all those women, the Son of Sam. And I didn't really, I mean, I just stood there in shock because, A, that's not a particularly pleasant or nice association to make. And, B, I thought it was pretty clear, and yet I do get this all the time. Well, not all the time, but fairly frequently, these jokes about that with people who either don't know or don't remember the fact that the Son of Sam's name was David Berkowitz, which is not David Lefkowitz, or if they do know that and they're just riffing because our names are close, they're not that close and it isn't funny. So, here I am, I'm standing there, just want to get my ticket, and I get like, oh, you know, you're that guy that's named that the Son of Sam killer. I basically, whenever I'm in a situation where I feel a little bit uncomfortable or defensive like that, I, of course, go on the offensive because I'm a radio person. I'm a talking person, as you can tell. So, you know, I smiled, I laughed, you know, and I realized they were trying to be kind of fun. So I said, well, you know, I could tell you some things about Charlotte Moore, who is this old demon from ancient Ireland. And they all laughed at that. And Charlotte Moore, of course, being the name of that artistic director. And I think she felt a little bit embarrassed by that because, you know, especially with a critic, the last thing you want to do is piss him off about nothing before he's going in to see a show that he's going to talk about on the air or write about. Which, by the way, in case I forget or I get all tangled up in this Dave Goes Off narrative, it is a wonderful show. I mean, not too many performances left by the time you hear this, but they really do a very, very fine job, and it's one of the better Shaw productions that I have seen. Very sharp. It goes. It's a talky play. There's nothing you can do about that, but the talk is just doesn't feel like it's rambling. Everybody really seems up there knowing what they're doing, and you end up really getting engrossed and involved, and wondering what this daughter's decision is going to be. And yes, Dana Ivey is terrific, but some of the actors are just as good. So, you know, kudos. I'll say that right now to Irish Rep. So you know that I haven't been affected by the fact that this woman was goofing on my name for absolutely no reason at all. And I don't think she really knew me, or knew who I was, except to know that I was on the list as a critic. So, I walk away, I get the tickets, I'm waiting for Christine Lavin. And then, I guess the artistic director thought a little better of what she had initially said, because she stepped out of the box office and came over to me several feet away. And she said, you know, didn't mean anything by it, but did I know that my name was so prevalent that there was another guy by the name of David Lefkowitz, is my name, who was also a theater person, but a rather strange theater person. And this was news to me. I mean, I would figure I would have known if there was another guy by my name. Granted, I didn't start reviewing until the early 1980s, but still, that's a long enough time if this guy was part of theater lore for someone to clue me in. And she told me, oh, yeah. What happened was this guy would stand outside of Sardi's restaurant. You know that place on West 44th Street? It is the inveterate classic theater restaurant hangout. That's the place where they have all the caricatures of the actors drawn on the walls. And that's where, I mean, a lot of theater actors, when they go after a show, they go to a drink at Sam's. Which is another establishment, but for dinner and stuff like that, or for people who are coming out of town to see Phantom of the Opera, it's Sardi's is the theater food place, and that's still where they announce, like, the Drama Desk, or even the Drama Desk or the Outer Critics Circle nominations, and the Outer Critics Circle Awards tend to be there every year. So, there is a guy who would stand outside of Sardi's for, I guess, long period of time, especially if he realized that there was some event or cocktail thing taking place. And he'd stand out there with his pad and pen and just pester the people going in or out for autographs. And maybe he wouldn't pester them, but he was kind of like this gadfly who was there. Not a homeless person, but someone who didn't really add to the atmosphere that Sardis was trying to convey. And also, you know, a lot of celebrities, I'm sure they're used to the autograph signing thing, but imagine every time you go into Sardis, you've got to deal with this guy, oh, could you please, oh, could you please. You know, it's not the stage door of a theater. This is already someone who's out of that mode and just going off for lunch or dinner. So, here's this guy, my name, and the story she wanted to tell me also was that a friend of hers, another actor, John McMartin, veteran Broadway actor, was going to go in for a couple of drinks in the thing, and the guy struck up a conversation with him, and he wasn't just such an autograph hound. I guess he'd kind of pal around or buddy up to these celebrities, and McMartin apparently is this genial, gentle soul. I think he's still with us, or maybe we lost him a couple of years ago. He always would end up playing these drunks on stage. He played a drunk in Showboat. He played a drunk in a couple of other recent shows. It was a Showboat revival I'm talking about. So McMartin, you know, probably had one or two in him already, would be talking to this guy, and the guy seemed really cool, so he brought him up to Sardi's and you know, stood him for drinks. So he's up there, and then Vincent Sardi apparently called McMartin over, away from the guy, and said, what the hell are you doing? And John McMartin said, oh, this is a cool guy, I'm you know, having some drinks with him, it seems like fun. And Winslow Sardi says, this guy, he's the thorn in our side, he stands out there, he annoys all, you know, our famous patrons by begging for autographs, get him out of here! So that apparently was the big story about the other Dave Lefkowitz. And it doesn't explain that much, except for the fact that I remember when I first started out as a critic, and some of the press agents that I deal with, and when I say press agents, what I'm referring to are the folks who do not so much the marketing, not the TV ads for Broadway and off-Broadway shows, but these are the folks who handle the critics and the famous people coming in for complimentary or press tickets or trying to schedule interviews or do stories about the shows. Well, those are the folks that we deal with. And some of them were very sweet right off the bat, even though I didn't have a name, even though I was reviewing for some little, you know, Long Island business newspaper. They took me seriously right from the get-go, and I've always felt very indebted to them. And they're still in the business, and they still know me, and I still know them, and owe them quite a bit of respect and gratitude for the respect that they paid me. And then there were one or two who were just jerks, who were just like, who are you, was the attitude. Like I was somehow pulling food out of their mouths by even asking to review a show and get tickets to a show for, you know, a column that I was going to print. And sometimes they would just hang up on me or say, you know, there were no tickets available, and not just, oh, you know, I'm sorry, we're sold out, too bad, or anything like that. I'm saying really nasty, like go away, hang up kind of things. And I wonder now if just maybe the excuse behind some of that was that maybe these were some old-timers, and one or two of them were, who thought that I was the David Lefkowitz who was outside Sardi's bugging their people. So, it's kind of, I mean, it's a long, shaggy dog story for not that much of a point, but it does go to show. But I'm telling you, there's more than one David Lefkowitz, you know, that you can Google all over the country, and there are dozens of them. There was one in New York, and I found this out. I was so disappointed quite a few years ago I found this out, that, because I always figured, okay, I hope maybe one day I become rich and famous, or at least just famous, so everybody knows my name, Dave Lefkowitz, David Lefkowitz, whatever it is, and it would be me, you know, just like there's a Harrison Ford, just like there's a Tom Cruise, there'd be a David Lefkowitz. Well, to date, I haven't become famous, but it also gets me bugged when I find out that there's other people in entertainment, in media, or now in theater, who share my name, because now I have to not only, you know, get my name out there, but fight them for the name recognition. And I learned more than a decade ago that there's an actually well-known synagogue cantor named David Lefkowitz. And he's been doing his thing for years and is quite well-known in that field. So great, you know, another Jew with my name. Or, you know, more recently, when I go Googling my name, because we all do, and I find Dave Lefkowitz, and it turns out there's a musician. I think he's a bass player who's done a bunch of stuff, and he goes by my name, or he's an engineer on some record albums. I'm like, God damn, can't I even be entitled to, like, have my little corner of fame with just my name? You know, can somebody change his name to Danny Lefkowitz or Doodles Lefkowitz, something like that. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know out there that I am the Dave Lefkowitz. You can call me David Lefkowitz, too. I host Dave's Gone By. There's only one of me who does that every Sunday night at 11. And I talk a little more about this, but I actually have someone out at the door. It's Donald Trump, and we're going to lunch together. Except it's not that Donald Trump. Be back soon.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean, listen to me on Compact Disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like the Baghdad Elections and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $12 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD.
Hi, this is filmmaker Mike Shiley, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on GBB.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Just have enough time for half a dozen thank yous. Thank you, sponsors. MortgagesRock.com, Hewlett Minuteman Press, and Performing Arts Insider Magazine. Thank program director Tom Ross. Thank you, Mike Shiley. Visit InsideIraqTheMovie.com. Really good stuff. And sorry about the sound quality on that interview. Totally my fault, but the content was fabulous, and that was all Mike. And speaking of fabulous, thank you, as always, to my wife, Joyce, and thank all of you for listening. Remember that Live365.com airs vintage episodes of the show on Thursday nights. Go to davesgoneby.org for the details. And our next new show airs next week, Sunday, March 5th, the 162nd episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz, and not the Sardis one, wishing you a good night. We will Iraq you, and gone by.